It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. So, you've got 100 followers on Twitter, huh? Wow.
I've never tweeted yet, but I got a whole bunch of people lined up ready to go. Now, because you mentioned this, I'll get more.
So, you got 100 tweets. Yeah. No,
I got 100 tweets.
Followers. Fuck off, followers.
Tweet with tweet.
Oh, my God.
I have no idea. I just find it hilarious. Someone helped us out a while back to preserve some of the domain names and stuff like that. And I went, you know, that's actually pretty smart, I guess, if we're going to do something like that. So sign up. And then little did I know, got all these people sitting behind a parked car. I'm going everywhere.
I pray every day somebody takes the Wayne Jacobson domain there, so I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Oh, come on, Tweety Bird.
Oh, I get two or three requests a week to be a Twitter guy. I want to follow your Twitter thing. I'm going, I don't have anything I want to say every day. And I don't want to engender some kind of following for...
I got some dear friends that just tell us way too much information. That just kind of like technology is not serving them and the general public.
Oh, you look at Facebook that way too. Some of the updates, people every 10 minutes, they've got to tell you what they're doing now.
Well, I love you, but I don't care. I really don't.
The hide feature is a gift. Just hide them and there they go and life goes on and... We've got a God Journey Facebook page. We've never announced it, but
I know. Well,
400 people have found their way to it. It's hilarious.
I know. It's just crazy. What's with that?
Well, it gives people another outlet to dialogue. Hopefully, it will be more healthy dialogue than some of the other dialogues, but you never know.
Well, hey, we could talk about healthcare again.
No, I think I pretty much. We have gotten more email, blog comments off healthcare than it shows that we're a passionate country about it.
I guess so.
And the world is pretty negative on the U.S. and our inability to deal with it. That's interesting. Almost everybody from overseas has said, you guys don't get it. This is not socialism. This is making sure everybody in the society is cared for at a minimal level. And you guys just don't get it.
Everybody can have their opinions. That's cool.
But I'm tired of talking about it. That's for sure. Even though people enjoyed that full and frank and robust discussion.
Yeah, and we're not on the same page. This is great.
We're not on the same page about that. And somebody wanted to loudly disagree with Brad. Not even sort of disagree, but loudly disagree.
What, in double quotes or something?
Capital letters.
Caps. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm callous and misinformed by some people's opinions.
Hey, but I'm surprised as the head honcho at the Windblown Media, you're letting some of the better books in the culture get by you.
What did I just do?
I would think you'd be out there getting these kind of books. This is
you got a little clipping there. What is it?
A little newspaper clipping. It was an announcement.
It's a tiny clipping.
It's an announcement by Tyndale House Publishers. It said,
Ed?
Yeah, Gail Haggard, wife of disgraced pastor. I love that, disgraced pastor.
Oh, would that be Ted?
That'd be Ted. Plans to write a memoir titled Why I Stayed, according to Tyndale House Publishers. This is my story of choosing to love my husband through some of the most difficult challenges any marriage could face, Gail Haggard said in a statement.
Well, God bless her. No, I think that is cool.
Yeah, I'm surprised you do.
Well, maybe.
I don't know.
We're not there to know, huh?
I'm there enough to know.
No, you're not. We're not in the relationship. You know what? A situation can be gloriously confused and codependent. That's one option. Or it could also be the same thing, but with someone with a different heart, different motive. Could be amazingly sacrificial and awesome.
Or it could be just another book publisher with some celebrity name to slap on the front.
Probably.
And somebody's going to give their dysfunctional reasons as to why we stayed together, which, you know, in the biblical ideal, staying together is great. In the reality of life, I mean, I like the South Carolina governor's wife after his torrid affair down in Brazil. She's finally said,
I'm out of here.
This is your problem, not mine. And of all the wives that have been involved in these kinds of affairs by their men, I love her sense of just honesty and integrity. And you got to go find whatever it is you got to find. And I'm going to take care of the kids because that's what my life's about.
I think that's cool. I think the point I would make is, you know what? Unless you're actually in a situation, a lot of times I don't know that we know. Which it is.
Oh, I'm sure in this situation. But, you know, it has that earmark. And I'm not saying it. No, I'm not saying it isn't that specifically. I'm just saying 90% of the time. This is just another celebrity name to slap on a book that people are going to read. I wish there was some requirement that a book had to have a minimal threshold of adding something value to the culture before someone prints it. But I just don't know who gets to enforce that. So I'm not thinking that's going to happen.
You're not signing up for the book police there, pal?
But then I was right. You probably should have gotten that title nailed down instead of letting it go to somebody else.
No, I think I would have passed on that one.
Not a compelling story to tell, unveil the heart of God to the spiritual
character. Not for myself, no. I'm excited about the ones we got coming out.
We got some new ones?
Yeah. Bose Cafe and the Misunderstood God. They'll be out shortly.
We've talked about Bose. We have talked about Misunderstood a little bit, but we'll do full-blown podcasts on them as they come available. I hate to torture people too far out.
I like teasing them. They're great. Go look for them. Find them under a rock someplace.
Both are great stories. One's fiction, one's out of someone's life, but still a wonderful story of coming to grips with a God of love.
You know what I
think? An angry tyrant.
You know what I think people are finding refreshing? And not a plug for the books, but I think people love to be able to look at stuff clearly as opposed to with a little kind of smack of agenda, as if someone's trying to sell something. You know what I mean? There's things.
Aren't we trying to sell something?
No.
Okay.
Are you? I'm not.
Well, I think the case could be made that we are selling books.
Yeah, but as far as it's not some agenda to go, oh, okay, you know, here's just, you know, buy this little ideology. It's more like I think I love the refreshing look at the God who is and the way that, you know, as opposed to trying to just gloss over it in religious Christianese, you're taking a look at the real nit and grit of going like, what do we really think?
Yeah, like that. Should provide some interesting discussion.
Yeah.
For sure. Some neat email coming in. This is from Kevin. The God journey is a cool breeze over a burnt out soul.
Hey.
If we're doing that, that's kind of fun, I think. Thank you, Wayne and Brad, for being the antiseptic and ointment of my brokenness and pain, Julie writes. Your podcast allowed enough healing to happen so that I could be more receptive to hear about Papa's love. The more I listened, you instilled in me the desire to embrace that love, and then to top it all off, you showed me what abundant living is all about and what Jesus meant when he said, I've come to give you life to the full. I am free of the masks that I have hid behind for the last 30 years. The masquerade is over. Gone are the masks of pretense and performance. You guys rock. Thanks for rocking my world, turning it upside down. I still have a long way to go, a lot more healing to be done. But compared to where I came from to where I am now, I can't imagine it getting any better than this.
You go, girl.
Isn't that great, Julia?
You know, I think what's so fun about the fact is it pretending, when it's two little kids having a blast, I think that's great. When it's stuck in a religious context where it's like, how you doing, brother? And you've got to have that little, oh, just great praying for you. I mean, just to be able to shed yourself of that need to kind of perform and to be able to be real, that's awesome.
Yeah, get the mask off and just be where you are in the journey. Be okay with it for yourself, and then you'll be okay with it even if other people aren't okay with it.
Yeehaw.
And that is abundant life, and that is some neat freedom. Tim in Virginia wrote, one of your recent podcasts, you talked about being in a safe place. I have tried on three different occasions to plant churches. Each time, in the back of my mind, I thought this would be a safe place for believers to be real. Needless to say, they all failed. But the Lord brought something clearly to mind one day, spoke to my heart, and said, Tim, you are the safe place. He did not need to explain. I knew. To love as he loves and follow him makes me safe to be around. He has been able to freely love in me and through me. I just needed to let go of all my efforts to create and live in what he is already doing and has done. That's neat insight.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the biggest challenge is when you have good intentions and you're trying to do something. It's not the same as when God kind of surprisingly does something in and through you. The more some people try, the more I sometimes watch with a little sort of painful observation of going like, gosh, they're almost trying to force it. I think it's meant out of a sincere someplace in them, But when you're trying so hard, you can almost like reverse magnetism. You can force the very thing you're hoping to see happen away.
It brings the arm of flesh into something wonderful God might be doing. And our arm of flesh, we always think we'll push it down the road further. And we actually push it in the deep ditch further.
Yeah.
That's what we end up doing.
That didn't work out so good for Uzzah, did it?
I found that writing to someone else today because I think there's such a respect, growing respect in my heart, for the ways in which God works and the ways in which God brings people together and the ways in which God works relationally. A growing respect for that. That when people want to get in there and organize it and manipulate it and and it's not like, hey, I appreciate the heart that comes from. I do. You want to help this happen. I just don't ever see the fruit of an arm of flesh getting involved that's ever good. Because you can sign people up, organize something, and then people can say, well, you guys are against organization structure. No, not really. I'm all for facilitating things that God does, but there's a difference. And so I admit it's a fine line.
You have to let go of kind of controlling the outcomes. And I think that's what a lot of well-intended folks, it's like they experience this nice thing, therefore they want to sort of reduplicate it for others and all their friends. And so they're trying to make an outcome happen. And I'm just going like, I gave that up. I mean, I was the quintessential, let's find the golden bullet, the silver bullet, and let's put it in the gun. And I shot every bullet I had. And I finally, after a
and
long...
And some you didn't have.
Yeah. And a long, I took some of other people's bullets.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I mean,
shot everything.
I shoot whatever I can find. But I recognized after a long, long journey, the reality is I never was able to produce the results that I was longing for, except in those serendipitous moments when it didn't seem like I was doing it. And initially it was frustrating because it's like, I think part of me wanted to get credit. I'm so sincere, I'm so passionate, I'm going to be that match strike, I will strike up revival. You're just going like, when you kind of sit back, you're just going like, okay, that was so silly, I don't get that. I don't know why I pursued that with the passion that I did, but I recognize now I'm far more excited about going in with curiosity, like, hey, Lord, are you doing anything here? If so, help me have eyes to see it, not so much do it.
Right, and how do we come alongside God to let God do what he does, which is very different from, hey, thank you, we'll take this over from here and drive it to its unnatural conclusion. That seems to be...
I got it, God, I'll call you in about 10 minutes.
And I think the scary thing about what we're talking about right now, that whole arm of flesh thing, it can come from the most wonderful of intentions. It can. We just are trying to help people. And I think often, we get involved because like, there's a felt need we have or an outcome that we want. So we're trying to manipulate the outcome. I think that kind of is always a good sign something's up. But it's not that God doesn't want us involved. And at times doing things, as Paul said, I labor and strive more than any man, Colossians 1. He's not just couch potato, trust Jesus, I'm not doing anything. But... And I think this is an interesting, because I don't think it's always that clear which is the arm of flesh and which is my participation with God's working.
I don't think it's clear at all. I think I'm only in a place in my own life that I can see it on the backside of a hill called exhaustion. I've tried sincerely so hard.
I have a cabin on the backside of that mountain called exhaustion.
I mean, I think it's only in that bankruptcy of your own poverty of spirit that you start to recognize, gosh, so much of that was me. How do I know that? Well, because I am spent. And I do have, graciously, some different moments where it's like God did something wonderful and I feel energized and alive because of that, not spent.
Yeah,
and there's a difference.
There is. I think there's that spiritual burned out kind of exhaustion.
Uh-huh.
There's also even when you're involved in something God's doing and it's fairly taxing, you can at the end of the day be exhausted physically and mentally, but you're not burned out spiritually. I think that's probably the difference.
Yeah.
Because I've been in things where just like, I'm done. Gosh, I'm exhausted by it. But it's a good exhaustion. It's
Tiredness is normal.
There's a wonderful element to that. Yeah. And Paul seemed to have that sense of how much confidence in the flesh? None. I got none. Our flesh can't do anything to help God do what God does. It's not going to make the difference. It's not going to make it happen. At the same time, he's not the couch potato that then says, well, let God do it because I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit here and watch God. There are times he did, I mean, labor and strive, go out, get shipwrecked in the deep and beat up by guys on the thieves on the road from where he's traveling from town to town. Paul had a great fix on that I hope I'm learning. I think I'm much more quick to say, that feels more like Wayne's flesh than God's impetus in my life.
I think you only get that when life is being lived out. I don't think you get that in a class. I don't think you pick that up as a set of sermon notes. I don't think you go, oh, someone told me that. I sort of feel like that's one of those walked out, lived out realities. I know when I'm under my own steam. I do. Because I can start to feel that sense of strain, like, wait a minute. I'm not in sync with what God's here. Either I've lagging behind or I've gotten a little bit ahead, but somehow the weight of this ox thing has shifted and it's on my shoulders. And I think the challenge is how do I keep in step with the Holy Spirit when that isn't a formula?
Yeah.
That's a person.
But I grant you that. I think there's indicators though. Like I think one of those things might be when what I'm doing for God is about getting somebody else to do something I think they should do. You can almost always conclude the flesh is involved here, you know?
Yep.
When, and I think Kevin points to that, when I'm trying to create a safe place. So I've got to make you act a certain way. People come in, have to respond. We have to have rules around this. We went to one home group that had 3 pages of rules they read because they wanted to be a safe place.
And glorious.
At the end of reading the 3 pages of rules, you're not a safe place. So I think Kevin pointing out that when I realized that what God's working on has to do with what's happening in here, what I can control, not out there, someone else that I can't control. And so I'm trying to make something, get people committed, whatever, make someone follow through on what they said they'd do. That's exhausting.
Yeah, but real life, I mean, I can understand the good intention behind wanting to create a safe place. So I'm not trying to ding that.
No, it's a great idea.
But I just kind of go like, we don't live on that planet. It's not a, I don't think anything is safe. Personally, I've kind of like.
In what way do you mean that? Because I think you're just talking about a place where people can be real and open.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
In terms of the real life application, the minute I step out that door, I have such little control over so much that's going on. My safety is found in a hymn as opposed to an environment that I like to sort of sit and relax in. It's sort of like to be able to find that sense of security. I've lost a tremendous amount of fear and worry. I think I used to work so hard like a chess player trying to make sure I could outmaneuver whatever was going to happen. I was prepared for everything. And I recognized, you know what? I don't really have a clue what's going to happen anyways. So much of that is anxiety-produced activity. And my life gets a little more simplified when it's sort of like, all right, God, I can be a busy person, but I don't like that fretted out factor in it.
Yeah, but I don't think he was talking about being able to control all that happens to us. I think what he was talking about, particularly planting churches. We want to have a place where people can come and be open, real, and honest, confront grace. And I think that's a laudable objective. I think any group that gets together ought to be thinking, hey, let's be that.
Sure.
The reality is, how do you plant that? How do you make other people be that? That's where you lose your control. You can't make other people
do
that. No,
you can't. You get one person in there with their agenda, and it's not.
And it blows the group to shreds.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you don't try. It just means you don't have that control.
Well, it comes back to me. Am I a safe place? Can I live in the place that other people are safe around me to bear their junk, to live in grace, to be honest and not have to pretend? That I have some measure of cooperation in providing. I can provide that for people I relate to. I can't make you provide it for people I relate to. Or, no. You know, if I got 10 people in my home, I can't make all 10 people provide that because we're notorious.
Don't you wish you could?
We're notorious advice givers. Or, I went through that, and here's how God did it in me, and so you should do the same thing. I mean, gosh, I just weary of all that advice stuff. But to be a safe place for people, laudable. Again, do you get there because God shapes something in you? Or do you get there because I'm going to make everybody around me stop doing things that are unsafe? And then you become unsafe in your passion to stop other people from being unsafe.
Yeah, it's so interesting about the kingdom, and I think some of the way in which God works, if not almost an exclusive way, is I don't really know what of enduring value I have or I can give that I first don't have to receive from him. You know, that we love because he first loved us. The only way I'm ever a safe person for somebody else is when I've come to know the safety that I find in him.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do any of this apart from him. And so much of religion basically gave you a whole bunch of shoulds to go off and do it, and it didn't mandate that you stay connected to the source. It was sort of, here's the mandates, go for it.
Yeah, we don't need the person now because we got the rules instead, which it's a bad trade. I'm going to live by principles rather than inside a person who's guiding me, walking me through my day. That's a really, really bad trait. And it always ends up kind of shipwrecked somewhere, as far as I know. This was interesting. I know she brought in the same article I did, this Unwired for God from...
it was Newsweek, right?
Sharon Begley and Newsweek this week, I guess.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the whole article. I thought this was interesting and are trying to grapple with this statistic. She was talking about, it's curious, some guy wrote a paper last week, Gregory Paul, in a journal called Evolutionary Psychology. Boy, it sounds like something I'd subscribe
to. Most people reading that.
Mm-hmm. I'm not. Anyway, he said this. He found that countries with the lowest rates of social dysfunction, based on 25 measures, including rates of homicide, abortion, teen pregnancy, sexually transmitted diseases, unemployment, poverty, have become the most secular. Those with the most dysfunction, such as Portugal and the U.S., are the most religious as measured by the self-professed belief, church attendance, habits of prayer, and the like. Now, this is fascinating.
We are number one.
Well, we're right there with
Portugal. Socially dysfunctional nations.
25 measures of social dysfunction. And the wrestling of the article was, which I took a different take on it. The article was wrestling with, so the more functional society gets, the less religion we need. That's where she was trying to go. That maybe as societies even out, the need for religion vanishes so that social dysfunction creates the need for religion. When I was reading this, because I have Dave Coleman as my friend, he's always messing with my head, and he says things like, religion creates the dysfunction. So is it, you know, and I can argue, but here's the reality. The reality is 25 measures of social...
Which is the chicken and which is the egg in this whole deal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're just taking it, well, it's probably that the more healthy a society gets, the less need for religion it has. But if you separate religion from faith, and if religion is what we've talked about, this arm of flesh trying to do stuff for God, we've argued before, that does make you more dysfunctional.
Yes, I do think so.
The whole guilt, performance, shame-based paradigm often leads to the very social dysfunctions they're outlining here. So you look at one... social observer looks and says, wow, these countries that have less dysfunction have less religion. So it undermines the need for it. Maybe religion is the problem.
See, I think they kind of acknowledged, or at least the lady Sharon does, they're not sure how they're correlated as to which causes which.
Yep.
But I think they are recognizing that there is some kind of a correlation. I thought what was so strange is that... when they're saying that the social conditions, in essence, are largely good, they're kind of benign, that's when there is not the awareness of your need for God. And I just sat there going, like, well, okay, I don't know that that's a good thing. If there is a God who really exists, he isn't just a self, he isn't just my selfish need. You know, like, well, I'm going to believe in God because it suits me. So? There's a glorious person called Jesus that I think I'd be fascinated with even if I didn't need him. I think that's the thing that I go like, where is that being displayed? Because when people look at religion, so oftentimes it is that consumer orientation. It's me getting my needs. Therefore, I go to the deity of choice and you're just going like, I don't know.
Well, I think that's part of what they're ill-equipped to talk about. They're not going to separate between religion and faith.
Right.
Where you and I do all the time. We talk about religion as being somewhat negative.
I would agree with a lot of this article for different reasons.
Yes, exactly. Because religion is a false environment. And I'm talking about the way we talk about it. When it's human effort to try and shape God's approval for our lives. When we're in that space with it, it's very self-centered. It puts shame right in the front of our lives. Shame is the thing that will twist us up in more dysfunction than just flesh will. And I know a lot of people don't believe that, but I do. I absolutely believe flesh twists you up in a certain way, and shame-based performance twists you up even more in the same direction. And that the only thing that untwists us is the faith in the presence of a living God. And probably that's why, and I think we've observed this throughout history, whenever societies go through trauma or individuals go through trauma, they're much more open to the God of the universe being out there. You're in a foxhole with bullets flying over your head, and God, if you save me, I'll be a minister for you the rest of my life. I mean, that promise has been made a million times, that moments of extremity will turn us in toward something bigger in the universe. But Jesus just said, you know what? If you love one another as I've loved you, then the whole world will know. Jesus didn't hang the gospel on traumatic need being the door. It often is, and I think Jesus is very open to walking through that door. But what he asked us to do, if we lived as people who loved like we were loved, what people around us would find engaging is the person of God, not the life raft for my storm, but a father worth knowing, a love worth having.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the Old Testament stories, and I look at Moses, and I've always been intrigued, because I find, like, in Exodus, there's a couple of chapters that I just, like, man, he was experiencing and tasting something that was absolutely foreign to what everyone else was going through. He was experiencing the living God in a face-to-face friendship dynamic that you're just going, like, gosh, that doesn't come out as clear in the rest of the Old Testament. There's moments where he's engaging with God in a way that it's like, oh, Moses, you know, you guys can just go have the whole promised land. I'm just not going with you. And there was something about his relationship that he said, well, I don't want to go.
Right.
And I go, like, to me, those are like the high watermarks of going, like, Lord, I want to know what he knew about you in that moment. When David and, you know, he's trying to build God this great temple and all this other stuff, and God kind of says, you know what, David, we're going to turn this around. You know what, I don't really need a temple, and I don't, you know what, I'm going to build you a house. And you're just going, like, that moment where he's sitting there in front of the ark, and you're just going, like, gosh, that is face-to-face fellowship that I think we were designed for. But so oftentimes the duties of religion and the I've got to do to be thing, it's such a barrier.
It is for a lot of people, because religion's like vegetables. You know, people see somebody, you know,
they're good for you.
They're supposed to eat this stuff because it, you know, it's like that. And people who are eating it, people don't come in the room and go, ooh, I want what he's having.
Yeah.
But when you look at Jesus and the way he lived alongside Father, you got disciples going,
there was the I want what you have.
Yeah, I want what you've got.
Yeah.
I want to live there. I want to eat that. And it doesn't have to be chocolate cake necessarily, though that would be my favorite. But, I mean, it could be a nice tender cut of carnivore food. But the reality is Jesus lived this journey in a way that was engaging to the people around him that were looking for life. It wasn't engaging to people who were playing political power games.
No. And it was in such a way that, I mean, to me, some of the greatest miracles in the Gospels are when it says, well, they left everything and followed him. And I just go, like, who does that? It's not like they didn't have anything, so, well, I guess there's nothing else to do. It's more,
I got
like
a net full of fish.
To be able to leave everything, because you're so tractor-beamed to a person and to what's happening in that relationship. Oh, my gosh. Talk about what will change planet Earth. Talk about what solve healthcare. I mean, those kind of
things. Oh, don't go back there.
I'm not going there.
Don't go back there.
I just think so oftentimes we look at the gospel, religion, Christianity, and we're always looking at it as a means to an end, and I'm going, like, my gosh, he is an end into himself. If we knew God is in that kind of enjoyment, I don't think the whole St. Francis, go forth, proclaim the gospel if necessary, use words. I think that's what some of what was going on.
I do, and the passion of our lives then maybe comes back to something as simple as saying, God, I want to live in you in such a way that people around me want to eat what I'm eating.
Yeah.
They want to feed what I'm feeding. They want to know the God I know. And I don't think religion ever attains that. Even people who criticize me, and I've gotten quite a few, I've had that week where the negative side of having my books in Walmart has been beating my door down with.
Woo-hoo.
One guy wrote me this horribly angry letter. I was the cause his brother has deserted the church and out living on his own. And it was a rant. And I wrote him back and I said, you know what, we may not see this the same way, but I think if you love your brother, don't reject your relationship with him just because he's not living it out the way that you want him to live it out. So there's lots of ways to live it. And he wrote, I am shocked to have gotten the letter from you. I fully expected you to give me, thank you for your note and here's my other books you can buy, kind of an automated response. And he apologized. He said, I want to apologize for the way I deeply love my brother. I'm scared for him. It launched a pretty neat thing, but I'm on that side now of people being very angry for me if somebody's made a decision and quoted my book as their reason for doing what they're doing. And I think what they're doing is great. I think what his brother's probably got a greater shot at life, because when religion is your answer and obligating people to the principles you're obligated to because you think that saves you inside this bubble of God's eternal protective care, and if you're outside that bubble, you're going to fry and go to hell and bad things are going to happen to your life, that is never going to arise to the level where people say, I want some of that. Yeah. It's not. But you live alongside Jesus in a way that he makes himself known, and you become a safe person to love people that are broken. You give them the space in which they want to call down fire from heaven and burn people up. You can turn to them like Jesus did James and John and say, hey, man, you guys aren't done yet. You guys don't know what spirit that's of. But at least they had the space inside of their relationship with Christ to even say stupid things. And he loved them through it. Now, I'm hoping, that's my prayer every day. Father, I want to live this relationship with you in a way that's engaging to others. I don't want to go out and ram the gospel down someone's throat. I want somebody to see something in me and go, I want what he's having. And that, to me, is the essence of what transformed life would look like.
Yeah, and there's no performance that's ever going to achieve that. You know? I mean, it's like okay, well, I want to be... It's like, you're not going to behave in such a way that someone says, ooh, la la, I want that. It's not a performance. If you're experiencing life that you know is coming from him as the source, if there's anyone there to see that, they are gonna have, I think, that response. They're gonna see something that's, wow, that's what human beings were designed to be the recipients of.
Yeah, and then you don't have to go out and bash people into something.
No.
You have to beat people away. I can't handle all that's coming at my direction at the moment.
Yeah.
I love people whose lives get changed enough where they're saying, you'd think I'd nail the counseling sign outside my home for the people that are coming by with messed up marriages and broken lives and want to talk and want me to pray with them. And to me, that's the essence of what transformed life looks like. It's not, I've got to go out and give you my card and say, I'm a minister for Jesus, doggone it, come talk to me. But when people are coming to you saying, man, why? How do you live centered in where you live centered? How does peace prevail in your heart when all the garbage is going on around you too that's going on in the world? I think it's living differently that opens the door. And the flesh, religion, I guess that's why I'm just always harping on that stuff. It can't ever get there. It's best day it doesn't look like that. It's best day it's still a plate full of Brussels sprouts. My gosh. Hey, nothing worse. It may be great for me, but oh, for Pete's sake.
And one in a million likes that.
Yeah. Well, my wife's that one for California. She holds down for about 18 of them down here in L.A. area.
Well, you know, I mean, this is a little tangent, but...
A little tangent?
I think it's actually a big tangent. I'm reading this in Time magazine, and it's like something about Sri Lanka where it's like, you know, they found this 500-year-old statue of the Virgin Mary. And somehow, amidst all the unrest and the civil war that's been going on in that nation. Somehow they sort of hid this away, and now they're bringing it out, and somehow it's becoming this unifying force for the country, for the Muslims, for the Hindus, for the and I'm just going, I'm looking at this going like, okay, I don't get that. You get to carry around a little statue, and somehow this is bringing divergent streams together. And I used to have a response like, oh my gosh, look at the deception, look at the demonic stuff. And I'm just going like, gosh, it was interesting. I'm like, how in the world is that little statue doing that, and what's that about? I just had a much different response of going, it's still goofy to me. I still don't get that. I don't get the veneration of the Virgin Mary as if somehow she, how does that actually do anything here? But I looked at the fact that, you know, there's people that have been killing each other who are somehow finding, you know what, enough of that. We got enough other problems dealing with. And it's just, part of me is going like, gosh, Lord, how do you see these moments? That was the question I had out of this article, just going like, it's just different, God. How do you see that? What's going on there? I don't think I know enough to just give a summary judgment of just how goofy that is. Well, it's goofy.
It is goofy. It's definitely a step up from killing each other is doing something goofy.
Yeah.
That's a good step. I think God's going, that's a good step. Let's go a little further.
Positive motion towards the center.
Lose the statue. Find me. Life could be good. Yeah. I don't know how to relate to that stuff either.
But I look at that and it's like, you know what? Where there's people and where there is this desire to know and to be loved, part of me is going like, gosh, if we could relate in a way as opposed to just judge from afar, if you could relate in a way that somehow, you know what, somewhere in the middle of that, if it's reducing a bunch of killing and people that are at each other's throats are finding a different way, part of me is going like, gosh, I used to just subtly dismiss all that. And there's something different in my heart today that looks upon that differently, just going like, uh-huh. I don't have any more clarity than uh-huh.
Well, thanks for bringing your uh-huh to the podcast, because that's very, very helpful.
Well, I marveled at myself going like, gosh, you've really changed. You're either weird or just something's different.
We were talking earlier about what's inside me versus how I change people outside of me. I was thinking while you were talking about some of that. Kent, a friend from Missouri who often writes this, but he had a little post up on his Facebook page today about a fight he had with his daughter this morning. And it was in front of the mother-in-law, who at the end of the thing said something about, man, I tell you, if I wouldn't let my daughter talk to me like that, my dad would have knocked me senseless, kind of thing. And his response was, you know, in my conversation with my daughters now, I am less worried about the disrespect she's giving me as the disrespect it provoked in me to give to her. And I thought, whoa, there's a wonderful step forward there. One, the whole religious thing of, let's fight this power to power. She's the child, you're the adult, get the respect you deserve. You can't make somebody respect you. You can make someone act like they respect you. But when you actually respect the process, and, you know, his mother-in-law didn't get why you didn't just beat the daylights out of that girl. But Ken said on the way to school, they had because he didn't go all off and set a bunch of punitive damages and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they had this great talk on the way. By the time he gets home, mom's still ticked off that you let that child disrespect you. His comment at the end of the thing was, Sam and I have already moved on. We've already moved on to a walk of grace, of mutual respect, learning to live inside. It underscored that point so beautifully. I can't make you respect me. But I can respect you. I can't make you love me. I can love you. I can't make you encourage me. I can't make you give me what. I can't make you do anything. But I can love, encourage. And I think this is a great way to look at the whole idea of how I manipulate others to be happy versus what space Jesus allows me to live inside of so that I live differently. That's just a great story. I really loved it this morning.
That's cool. Yeah, I looked at that whole Virgin Mary thing, and I sat there going like, okay, if all I get out of this is, guess what? They weren't carrying around Buddha's bomb. No, I'm serious. They were carrying
around. Boy, you are stretching now. You got to stop reading Time Magazine, dude.
They're carrying around the mother of Jesus. And you're just like, okay, so who is she? Well, she's the one in whom Jesus was born. If that's all it is in the middle of your mess, there's a picture of someone in whom Jesus is born. To me, that's a pretty good message.
As I said, it's a step in the right direction.
It's better than what they were doing.
Hate to pitch a tent there,
yeah.
But you might want to keep walking on past it.
Evil walking.
That's why we call it the God Journey. Anytime you pitch a tent, man, it's all over.
Yep, camping fees.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.